Watch podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch podcast, this is a different topic than we usually discuss. This is a producer's perspective today. We're going to focus on the topic of custom grazing cows on rented corn stalks. And to talk about this, I'm joined today by Dr. Howden Clark, who's a veterinarian located at the Meat Animal Research Center there near Clay Center, Nebraska. But he also works with some area crop producers and does some custom grazing of cows on the side. Thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here, Aaron.
Dr. Clark, we had you on the Beef Watch podcast a couple years ago talking about a scenario where you brought in some calves, you grazed them on corn stalks through the winter and then sold them. The last couple of years, you've transitioned your enterprise more to custom grazing spring calving cows. Just tell us a little bit more about your experience with custom grazing on rented corn stalks, some of the things you've learned, and just your perspective on the opportunity to do this.
Yeah, well, as we talked about there years ago with the calves out on corn stalks, whenever we're asking a beef animal to grow and to put on flesh, they're going to need more protein than what corn stalks alone will provide. So like we talked about back then, we were supplementing them with, I think it was half corn, half distiller's grains, somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 pounds per head per day, targeting a 2 pound a day gain while they were out there. And that worked well for us, I think, in that scenario as far as growth went. But the beauty of a dry cow is that they can overwinter pretty nicely on corn stalks alone, and that saves a huge amount of labor in getting feed out to cattle daily. So that's been, I'd say, a better fit for our needs and meets the needs of the other guys that I work with on this project. In this case, they're the landowners. And so having cows out there is something that they have identified as a desire that they have, both from a side income standpoint and then also from a cropland standpoint. They really like having cows out there to clean up some of the extra trash that in a no-till system can be a benefit. They get that trash cleaned up, cycled into manure. So nutrient loss is almost zero. Nutrients stay put, just get cycled from cornstalk leaf and husk into cow manure. And then also the other thing they like from a cropland standpoint about having cattle out there is if they're going from corn to soybeans, they like to get as many of the kernels picked up as possible from the corn so that they don't have volunteer corn the following year growing up in the soybeans. So those are two benefits they see on the crop side. And then they're able to use labor and the resources they have there at the farm for the cattle in the winter. And it's a side income there as well. So it's been a good fit for all of us.
So talk about your relationship with landowners and how you work. You kind of do the brokering. You do the coordinating between the landowners and the cow owner. Just talk about that relationship. What does that look like? How do you work that logistics?
Yeah, I pretty much handle the scheduling, figuring out when the cattle are going to come and when they're going to go, then getting kind of just heading up, getting panels set up and get the unloading to happen and then the gather at the end and getting them reloaded. I kind of plan out when we're going to graze this field and that field and when we're going to move them and how many people we need for each move, depending on how far we're going. And then I actually handle all the fencing too. That's my portion of the project. And then I've learned some good things from a managing a relationship standpoint. One of the tickets is keeping cattle off of the pivot bases and keep them from damaging anything related to the pivot itself or the swing arm. So when we graze an 80-acre piece, it's really nice to run the pivot to the long axis of the field and then just fence it out. It's pretty easy to just stretch the fence then around the remaining corn stalks. You lose almost nothing and graze the 80 that way, and you don't have to worry about the pivot at all. If you're grazing a full quarter, then fencing out the pivot base is key. There are some very expensive parts there. And in addition to potentially an underground gas line, if it's a gas power unit there, if the cows break that, then gas can spill out. And the amount of money that can be lost is huge in a very short time if the cows damage the gas line. So what we've gone to and what's been working for us lately is just using a hot wire fence around every pivot base with its own solar powered energizer. That's been good. We haven't had them damage any of those. And we try to get out there and get those checked pretty frequently and make sure everything's good around those pivot bases. And then the other sensitive, kind of expensive piece on the pivot, not kind of, they're extremely expensive, is the swing arm that swings out and gets the corners of the field beyond just the normal circle. Sometimes those have pieces that hang down lower and cows can rub on them or chew on them or cause trouble out there. So if that's in their area where the cows are going to be, if it has anything that looks like they could damage it, we fence those out as well. So that's been a part of managing the relationship between me and the landowners and the cattle owners, is keeping those fences good. And then frequently checking fences. In our area, grazing cows on corn stalks obviously been done for generations, but then there was a real lull, I would say. And then it's come back big in the last few years. Maybe in the last decade, it's ramped up quite a bit again. Maybe before that, it was at pretty low ebb and there weren't too many cows on stocks. So some of the neighbors, when they see cows come in to a field that's near their house, can get pretty nervous and pretty worried about the fences and that kind of thing. They're worried that the cows will get out and walk all over their yard and damage their property. So probably can't say enough. The fences have to be hot, have to be up. And when it snows, they have to be checked. We had drifts this year that were well up over the fences. And so we had some logistical thinking to do, tried to get cattle into areas where they had good fence all the way around them and all that kind of thing. So those are a few things there that help us keep everybody happy, neighbors, landowners, everybody.
So talk about, as you work with the cattle owner, how do you set that up? How do you think about what you provide, what they provide, thinking about things like liability insurance? How do you handle that aspect?
Yeah, so I have a liability policy that is in place to protect me in case the cows damage something on the farm, essentially, a liability for myself. And then the landowners have their own farm liability policy. So we provide full care. So from when the cattle owner drops the cows off, they don't have to do much at all for those cows other than make a few decisions if it snows until they're ready to pick them up. So full care for the winter, which for us is about a 4 months grazing season, ideally somewhere November 1st to March 1st is what we're targeting. Some of the decision making they make is if it snows deep to where we're going to have a lengthy time period, usually more than a week or two, that we would have to feed the cows hay to get them through, then they need to decide if they have a better option than that, somewhere to go with the cows, somewhere else to get them fed and taken care of. We typically try to keep 1 to 2 weeks of hay ready to go on hand for a winter storm, which would give us enough time to make those decisions and get all that stuff figured out. So we cover all the water, all the labor, all that kind of thing. And then the cattle owner takes care of the actual cost of the feedstuffs that we provide. So the mineral, they buy the mineral, they buy the hay, but we keep some on hand, but we only would ask them to pay for what the cows get. We don't ask for anything for the extra, the reserves, those we hang on to and use later on. So that's about how we have it structured, and seems to be working all the way around. So we've been thankful for that.
So you mentioned the need to have some hay on hand, and this is one of the winters where you guys got hammered pretty hard there after the first of the year for a few weeks and had some snow and cold. How do you handle logistics in some of those kind of scenarios in terms of making decisions on when do cows stay, when do we put them on a truck, how do we feed? Just talk about some things to think through in terms of preparation for that kind of event.
Yeah, we wouldn't be like, I would not be able to do, if I was by myself just renting corn stalks, I wouldn't be able to do it because I don't have any of the heavy equipment that we would need to feed big round bales. Or this year, and actually more than just this year, several times, we've pulled semis out that were stuck. We've cleared roads that the county hadn't gotten to yet to get semis in and out. We've pulled ourselves out when we've gotten stuck. We've pulled loaded trailers out. I mean, so without some access to heavy equipment, this would be a no-go for me. So that's a big part of the logistics of it, is working with somebody that's got access to that kind of equipment. Let's see. I think I might have forgotten the rest of the question.
Well, I think, yeah, you just talked about the snow and the need to have equipment to be able to get cattle in, cattle out, getting feed to cattle in a timely way. I guess, how do you set that relationship up with the cattle owner how do you have that conversation when you get into a scenario like you had this year? Because obviously you've made commitments or relationships with these landowners. And let's say, like it did this year, you get a lot of snow halfway through your grazing period. How do you handle that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, lots of conversations up front. In this case, so yeah, this winter, it ended up that we weren't able to keep the cows for the full grazing season. There was just too much snow. So they went home and we stopped charging. And so we lost out on the extra income from about the last third of the grazing season. In this case, I still think it worked out just fine for everybody that was involved. Turned out that if the cows had stayed and we'd fed them for another week or two, there would have been probably another month of grazing left at the end of the grazing season with open fields and stock availability again. You just never know. You got to make decisions looking forward, not back. So I think it was the right decision. Yeah, some of our costs were already spent. We had already put up the fence and that kind of thing. So we actually offered the fields to another group in our area that do the same thing, another three guys that bring outside cows in to graze on corn stalks. And they were able to get those grazed, which was good because the landowners that we had rented those from still wanted them grazed. And so we got them grazed. So we held up our end of the arrangement and then hopefully banked a little goodwill with them for the extra grazing that they were able to capture there. I had some cattle jump in with some of theirs and they helped me get them back. So those kinds of synergies of working together with neighbors and people involved in a similar enterprise are sure nice and can really save the day. So all in all, we talked about it a lot. We talked about different options, but ended up that they had good options for feed elsewhere. So it made the most sense for them to get the cows out of there. And we understood that and are hoping for a more open winter next year is kind of where we left it for this year.
So Halden, as I've heard you talk about this, one of the things that's come up multiple times is good communication. And so it appears to me that if you're thinking about doing this or you're involved with it, that's a pretty critical piece.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, if you're a person that likes to do things your own way with no input from anybody else, this may not be the thing for you to jump on. Yeah, it's got to be flexible, adaptable, got to pick up the phone when people call and address concerns. That's been one that whether it's landowner or cattle owner or neighbors or truckers, just try to, sometimes a trucker just looks at a situation and says, I'm not going in there. And in our case, we've just said, okay, we'll run and grab a panel trailer and we'll load you on the road and we can make that work and keep everybody content. That's kind of what makes the thing work. So trying to be a go-between is a role I sometimes fill, and I don't know if I do it well, but that's something to keep in mind. Yeah. If that's not something that sounds like something you could work with or do, it may not be the best option for a winter project.
So we haven't talked about cattle care very much. So I just kind of want to circle back to that and talk about, as you work with the cattle owner, do you have any specs on cow condition coming in, cow condition leaving? As you think about health and care, you know, obviously corn stalks, sometimes we can get a lot of downed corn and there can be acidosis issues or, you know, some health issues. How do you work with the cattle owner on addressing that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So like we talked about before, the cows on corn stalks, a dry cow on corn stalks, we're getting her what she needs just barely on corn stalks. So we want to make sure we're grazing enough acres. That changes a lot, eastern Nebraska to western Nebraska, linked to yield. And we use the corn stalk calculator that UNL has on the beef.unl.edu website. A lot. We put all our numbers into there and run those to make sure we're not waiting too long. We use the rule, once the husk is gone, the field is done, and we get them moving from that spot into a different spot. That's a big part of it. We've never had it happen, but if cattle came in thin, it'd be pretty tough to keep condition on them through the winter, especially if you have some nasty winter storms and some cold, wet days, and it'd be hard to keep condition on. So it's ideal if they come in pretty reasonable body condition. And then as they go out, I've kept in contact and ask them what they thought of condition when the cows left, and then check back a little while later and ask again, make sure it's stayed stable after they went home. And again, the communication piece. We've talked about even some weekly or twice a week supplementation if body condition wasn't where we wanted it, or if we wanted a little to add a little condition in that mid gestation time frame where it's probably the best chance you get to add condition. We've talked about some distiller's grain supplementation and haven't done it yet, but if the right situation arose, it'd be a lot easier to feed distiller's grains twice a week or once a week for dry cows to add a little condition than it would be to do it daily for calves or every other day for calves that need quite a bit more per hundredweight or however you want to calculate it. So that's been important for us.
I guess as you think about health issues, again, dry cows are usually pretty care limited, I guess, or maybe require a minimal amount of care. But if you have something come up, how do you address that?
Yeah, so two thoughts with that. One was the down corn and the acidosis. Haven't had to deal with huge amounts of down corn in recent years, but it's been an issue within the last decade, at least once, real significantly. And the way we've kind of gone about that is to graze a big group on relatively small fields. So there's not one cow that finds a pile by herself and just hurts herself on it. There's a whole bunch of them competing for any down corn that's around, and they just pretty much wolf it down right away. So that's been a helpful strategy. We keep our group all together. The whole group is together, and we just graze the one group from field to field. So that's been a way we've kind of managed that acidosis risk. And then one thing that we're adding this year is access to a chute. We've had a couple get a sore foot here and there, and it's been really tough to get anything done with them on a stock field with a hot wire fence around it and nothing else. So we added a portable chute to our operation this year. So we have a fully portable corral, blood box, alley, and now a manual chute, portable manual chute. So we should be able to get a sore foot here and there treated in the future, which we hate to send one home with a sore foot. We'd love to get those treated as soon as possible and get those addressed immediately. That's been something we've added. Everything we have is totally portable. Even our loadout at the end of the grazing season is all we can build it wherever we need to.
So you mentioned just moving cows from field to field. How frequently are you moving cows? How long do cows stay on a field? I realize, again, this may be an 80 or a quarter, but what's typical in terms of the amount of time cows stay?
Yeah, it's kind of yield dependent and then even field dependent. I can tell you, we follow the calculator, the corn stock calculator really closely and stay right within that based on yields and cow numbers and all that kind of thing. So, and it varies. It varies a lot by field. So, and how much down corn there is. And then at the end, we zip right through because if we have anything left, we want to get corn cleaned up and at least get the best of it for the cows before they go home. So if we have extra, we definitely get them moved right through. The other reason to speed up at the end is because by then the corn stalks that are laying there have had a whole winter's worth of moisture across them. You know, lots of freeze thaw cycles, lots of moisture draining across those corn stalks. So their quality is degrading whether they're grazed or not. So by spring, the quality is not there that was there in the fall. So by then we're speeding up and moving more quickly.
So what I hear you saying is you're using tools like the cornstalk grazing calculator, but the old proverb, the eye of the master's got a fat in the ox. You're going out, you're looking at the field, you're looking at cow conditions, you're looking at, you know, what do we have ahead of us? What's happened in terms of stock deterioration? How much husk is there? So this is something that's being continually evaluated, decisions are being made on. It's not just, okay, we've got this many cows and this many acres. This is how long we're going to stay.
Exactly. Yep. It's part of the flexibility. And then another factor in that is we love to do our moves on a Saturday because that's when the labor's available. So we always are trying to manage toward the big moves, at least on a Saturday. So just a small piece of the puzzle, but one that really makes it a lot nicer. That even depends how much, like how many fields we fence together. Because if we can do all our moves on Saturdays, the scheduling is really smooth. So,
yeah, well, there's a lot of logistics that go into this, a lot of moving parts and a lot of pieces to the puzzle.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
Well, anything else on this topic you'd like to highlight today?
I suppose the one thing we didn't say too much about is water. Water, we are very thankful that the fields we have grazed for the last two, at least 2 years, all have a hydrant within striking distance of the field, so we don't have to haul water. Hauling water adds a huge amount of workload to this type of a project. A lot of the other people in our area do haul water. They have straight trucks with huge tanks on them. If you think about it, a group of 300 cows, even if you're providing 10 gallons per head per day, which that's probably on the low end of what you need. Yeah, it's just under 30,000 pounds, right? If you 10 pounds per gallon would be 30,000 pounds. So if you go down just a little from there, 8 pounds a gallon, 24,000. So now we're talking many, many, many loads if you have a small tank. So it's easy to spend way too much time hauling water if you have a small tank, and it's easy to want a giant, giant truck if you have to haul a lot of water, and that can dent your profitability. So hauling water makes it a lot harder. A lot of people do it and get along with it, but it's nice to have a hydrant. It's a huge benefit. We pay more for the fields that have water access than we do for fields without, for that reason right there.
So you're in a scenario where you're not starting the irrigation well during the winter. You're accessing water from some other source besides the irrigation well.
Right. Yep. Hydrants from around homes, basically. So we're essentially grazing all the way around one home, and then grazing all the way around another home is that th those are the home bases for our grazing project.
Yeah, that is a big deal, because I, as you know, and as you well said, if you're hauling water, it changes the whole process significantly in terms of cost and dealing with cold weather. If you got a frost-free hydrant, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it sure does. If you had an electric well, that might do it, where you can start it and stop it without too much excitement, and you could fill a tank in a hurry with an electric irrigation well. But if you don't have electricity and you're needing to start an internal combustion engine of whatever variety, that just makes it really difficult and adds a lot of wear and tear starting that cold motor over and over all winter. And most farmers are not going to want to do that. That's too much wear and tear on the equipment for cows. So yeah, not haven't ever been in a situation where we're using the irrigation well for water yet.
Well, anything else we've forgotten in our conversation today?
No, I think that's about it.
Well, thanks for just kind of sharing your experience. I think the School of Hard Knocks is a really good teacher. The tuition's a little expensive at times, but appreciate you sharing what's worked, what you've learned, and some things you're using as you go forward.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Aaron. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Well, for more information on the topic we discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find more information on grazing corn stalks at beef.unl.edu. As Dr. Howden Clark mentioned at the website, we do have the corn stalk grazing calculator. There are also a number of resources there, NEB guides, extension circulars, articles on corn stalk grazing. And so if you have interest in that, would encourage you to visit the beef.unl.edu website.